The government of Sudan is challenging the latest estimate of the number of people who've died in refugee camps in the Darfur region of that country and in neighboring Chad. The United Nations has said that about 70,000 people died in those camps, not including the many who've been killed in fighting in Darfur. Sudanese officials say no more than 7,000 people have died. But the troubles in Darfur, which has already displaced more than 1 million people, is only the latest catastrophe to befall the people of Sudan. The largely Muslim agricultural nation, with oil fields in the south, has been plagued by civil war, instability, and famine for much of the past three decades. Francis Deng is research professor of international politics, law, and society at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies in Washington, D.C. He was Sudan's ambassador to the United States in the late 70s and 1980s, also Sudan's ambassador to Canada and Scandinavian countries. He joins us in our studios. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Your Excellency, how do we begin to understand your country and the various stresses that pull on it?
Well, I think your introduction was a very good start, because you have a country which in the past was simplistically seen as Arab-Muslim North mm-hmm. and African-Christian enemy South. Sudan is a country that is the result of mixing between incoming Arabs and Muslims and the indigenous populations at a time of history when to become a Muslim, to become Arabized, Arabic-speaking, elevated you above those who, blacks, heathens, were considered to be legitimate targets of slavery. Although that is history, the mentality that was created by that situation has lingered on. Mm-hmm. You then have the dominant group, which is in fact a minority, which identifies itself as Arab at the center, have been the ones in control and assume power when the colonialists left. The marginal regions of, for instance, southern Sudan, Darfur, the east, have been, in a sense, excluded, marginalized, to the point of being second, third, fourth-class citizens of the country.
Is it possible for anyone to live, let's say, in Khartoum these days and not be swept up in what's happening? Does Darfur, to people in Khartoum, seem as if it might as well be on the moon?
Well, you know, it's a very interesting question, because for a long time, people in Khartoum saw the South as remote, far away. Mm-hmm. So for decades, war was raging in the south, devastating that part of the country, but little felt. But then when the war resumed in 83, instead of fighting for secession, the People's Liberation Movement decided to recast the question as fighting for the liberation of the whole country, to be rid of the discrimination on the basis of race, religion, culture. That began to capture the imagination of people in the north, so that the war began to move northwards. Now there's a repeat of history. People in Khartoum see Darfur as far away. But again, with the international attention that mm-hmm. Sudan receives today, all the Sudanese are beginning to wake up and recognizing that the country they used to be so proud of, Sudanese thought they were among the best, whether in Africa or the Arab world. I think people are waking up to the reality that there is something fundamentally wrong with the country and that needs to be shaken.
Oil was discovered in South Central Sudan in the 1970s, and of course this is at least offers the promise of wealth to a society that would seem to open opportunities for many people. Has it in other ways also exacerbated some of the internal frictions in the country?
Absolutely, and of course oil has that potential of aggravating situations mm-hmm. both internally as well as attracting international attention. I mean, Sudan is, as you know, the largest country in Africa. Tremendous land, lots of water, and we have often been talking of Sudan as the breadbasket of North Africa and the Middle East. So really, had people used their resources wisely, Sudan would not have needed the oil to be the real stimulus for development.
Ambassador Deng, if you could design, I deign to refer to it as a solution, because I imagine that would certainly be mm-hmm. very difficult, but a next step in the evolution of Sudan into a society that can support prosperous and peaceful families, what would that be?
Well, that's an excellent question, and one the Sudanese really should be quite concerned about. I think we have to face the responses. Immediately we have humanitarian tragedies, particularly mm-hmm. in Darfur now, but also in the south. The reality that is unfolding now is challenging the leadership of the Sudan to pose some tough questions. What is this country? Who are we? Are we the Arabs we call ourselves to be? Are we just Muslims when we have Christians and people of traditional religions? How do we design a framework where everybody can have a sense of belonging as Sudanese on more or less equal footing? Equality will not come overnight, but you can create a legal framework of equality and opportunities so that people begin to evolve a new country called the Sudan to which everybody belongs. Otherwise, as it is now, if the leadership of the Sudan holds to the present image of the country, I'm afraid violence will continue and they may have to be forced out by violence instead of being part of the solution.
Ambassador Deng, do you still have any connections to the government, either personal or...
When I left the government because it was headed in a direction I could no longer protect and defend as Minister of State for Foreign Affairs in a fundamentalist direction.
Mm-hmm. When was this?
Under Nimeiri in 83. Mm-hmm. But as I left, I asked myself the question, am I turning my back on my country? And the question was clearly no.
Do you still have family there?
Yes, I have a huge family. My immediate family is with me, but my family is everywhere. And it's probably the largest family in Sudan. So I have remained engaged. Mm-hmm. I have worked with all those who have been involved with the peace process. And in my capacity as representative of the Secretary General, which I had for 12 years just ending recently, I have visited Sudan quite a number of times. And I talk to them with a great deal of candor as a Sudanese who is concerned for the welfare of his country.
Francis Deng, who formerly Sudan's ambassador to the United States in the late 70s and early 80s, he is now research professor of international politics, law, and society at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies in Washington, D.C. Your Excellency, thanks very much.
Thank you. Very nice to talk to you.